Welcome to Stoma for Life, the Bowel Cancer Awareness and Life as an Ostomate radio show and podcast. Your host, Rafaela, is here to debunk myths, clear up misconceptions, and help you approach the subject that so many people are afraid to talk about in a positive manner. Listen in for a new perspective. Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio.
Once again, welcome to Stoma for Life here on UK Health Radio. This is a very special episode. It's our final installment in this series for Bowel Cancer Awareness Month, proudly brought to you by DANSEC. As many of you know, I'm a proud ambassador for DANSEC. Their pouching and ostomy products are the very same ones I've relied on since I woke up from bowel cancer surgery just over 4 years ago. I remember those early days so clearly. Alongside my consultant, one of the very first people to come and see me was a stoma care nurse. In fact, I'd already met one the day before my surgery when she carefully marked the spot where my stoma would be. Now, that moment really, really stayed with me because it marked the beginning of a completely new chapter of my life. Now, stoma care nurses are truly some of the most important people in our journey as ostomates. They guide us through those first overwhelming days, helping us learn, adapt, and rebuild confidence. But their support doesn't stop there. They walk alongside us throughout our entire ostomy journey, offering care, reassurance, and expertise every step of the way. And that's exactly why today's conversation is so important. I'm joined by Anna Bergen, a highly experienced stoma care nurse with over 2 decades of expertise across acute and community settings, both public and private. Her career has taken her from surgical nursing roles in the UK to working in Australia, including time spent in the outback, and onto Ireland, where she has played a key role in stoma care services, education, and clinical practice as one of the country's leading teaching hospitals. She's passionate about education, has contributed to training the next generation of nurses, and has been recognized for her work presenting at national and international conferences. It's an absolute pleasure to have Anna with us today to share her insights, experience, and perspective on the vital role of stoma care nurses. Welcome to Stoma for Life, Anna Bergen.
Good morning, Rafaela. How are you?
I'm really excited. I'm really well, and I'm very excited to have you on the show, Anna. Now, let's start at the beginning. What led you into stoma care nursing, and what was it that made you choose this path?
So, yeah, thank you. And it's a pleasure to be on this show. So when I started my nurse training many, many moons ago, I was a teenager, and I will always remember my nurse training, the first stoma care nurse coming in to teach us about what a stoma was. And I had never heard of a stoma. I never knew anyone with a stoma. And I was shocked. I thought, this is something. How do people live with something like this? And then I was on the wards as an inexperienced student nurse, and I was meeting people and helping to try and teach them what to do with the guidance of a stoma nurse. And I really looked up to her, the very first stoma nurse I ever met. And that shaped me because I saw that how she was able to take the patient who was struggling and was dealing with this huge change in their body function and their body image and in just the basics of management. And she was able to prepare them for discharge, whereas I felt like I didn't have the skills to do that. So I thought, what magic does she have that she comes in and she sees this patient behind the curtains, and then maybe 2 visits later, the patient's able to go home. So I always had an interest then in learning more about it. And I always found that stoma patients, everyone kind of was nervous on wards, surgical wards. Staff would be very reluctant and nervous about caring for somebody because they were afraid they'd do something wrong or say something wrong or not be able to perform the care perfectly. So people would kind of be hesitant about caring for somebody with the stoma. So compared to other surgical patients who maybe just have a surgical wound. So it was one of those skills I thought, well, we all need to know how to look after these patients. They need our care. So that brought me down to the path of learning more about it and wanting to be able to be still a surgical nurse, but also caring for people with a stoma.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating because, as I said in my intro, we rely as ostomates so much on your expertise, and you are the ones guiding us and showing us a path of how our life is being shaped, how to manage our stoma. And I remember those first bag changes, they were so challenging, and I waited for them and they showed me and they were so patient, because to be very honest, the first bag change, my stoma nurse actually said, "Do you want to do it?" And I just couldn't face looking at my stomach because I was in such pain. And I said, "No, you just go on and do it." And they did. They didn't comment on it. It was no judgment. And then obviously the next pouch that had to be changed, they showed me, and it was just so filled with compassion, and it made me feel like I could be in control of something that actually was at that stage not in my control.
Yes, and that's part of our role, because I think as you become more experienced as a stoma nurse, you already know in advance the journey that patient will have. So you may have met them preoperatively and seen that they have an idea of what's going to happen, but they don't really have a good image of what it's going to be like. And then day one it's a reset button. It's like, that's the first day of the rest of your life as such. And there's no day off. So it's getting your head around that, or I'm going to have to get a handle on it, but in my own time. So our role is to see how we can support that person, because some people want to get discharged quickly. They have needs at home. They may have businesses or children or whatever the issue is. And they just want to get out the door, but they still have to know how to do basics before they can do that. And other people are really find it reluctant to engage. They may be angry if it's an emergency situation and they've woken up with a stoma that they know nothing about. I find those patients can be very traumatized, and it takes them a lot longer to engage and to adjust, especially in that early phase, because they're in shock, you know. So I have to look at the person, what's going on around them. Why did they have the surgery? Did they have any knowledge of having the stoma before their operation? Did we get to have a conversation or a sighting? Because not everybody gets sighted. And then, you know, were they an emergency? So as I said, those patients I find a little bit on the back foot a little bit, and they can struggle to play catch up, and they can often be sicker, physically sicker, because it was an emergency and maybe they have peritonitis or a sepsis. So they've got they've an uphill battle, let's say. But I know with my experience that they will get to a phase and a stage where they are independent, where they can manage it, and where it won't hopefully impact too much on their day-to-day life. But I can see that. It's like I can see that future for them, and I have to try and encourage them that, yes, that future is there for you.
And that's so important, because at that moment in time, you feel so helpless because you cannot envision it. With me, I had 6 days to get my head around a cancer diagnosis and to living life in an ostomy. So that was more like a tsunami breaking in over me. So those are the challenges that you've just touched on, that each story, each patient is individual, and you taking that into account, which I think is so important. And I get from that you're also adapting to everybody's speed of recovery or adjustment, because one might be, like you said, has pressing things to do at home or work, or wants to just get out of hospital. They might be quicker in learning or wanting to learn than others who might still struggle on a total different level.
That's it exactly. So we have to look at kind of a global picture of what's the issue with that patient, and knowing how important our reaction is with the patient, and how important the reaction of all the staff around them is too, because those first few days and weeks stay with that patient, and I know that now over the years of experience, and patients will tell me, I remember being told on a corridor I had to have a stoma. I remember, and they'll remember specific things, that they'll remember the first pouch change. They remember the sighting. So this is such a it's a massive moment in that patient's life. And although we meet many, many patients, we need to remember that we're vital in that. They'll remember us, they'll remember our reaction, and they remember the reaction of the nurses that care for them, whether that's emptying a pouch or teaching them to change a pouch. So that's why I think for me, it's very important that I train like that, the next generation, so that they're mindful of what their care will stay with that patient forever.
Yes, the impact they'll have. And you've just said it globally, because I know you've not just worked in Ireland and the UK, but also in Australia. Now, if we take that into account, are there any differences in the way nursing or stomach care nursing is approached, say, for instance, in Australia to that in Ireland or the UK? Or is it basically the same?
When I was there, and the hospitals I worked in, there were smaller hospitals. So I worked in the outback. I was one of the first Irish nurses that worked in this little hospital, and then I worked in Victoria and in Queensland. But I have to say, now that's going back quite a bit of time, but I have to say the standard of care was really high. Was excellent. Was it probably the best standards of care I've ever seen across the whole hospital setting in stoma care? I didn't really think there is a difference to the care that we give in Ireland or the care that's given in the UK or across Europe. Products, of course, were a little bit different, and access to products, and maybe not the range of products that we see here. I think the range of products were limited then. But there were still functional products, but maybe just not the same as what we have now. But as I said, that's going back 20 odd years, as we say. But the standard of care was excellent, and the organisation of care. So I have very fond memories of my nursing time there.
And I'm sure in those 20 plus years, you've seen a lot of improvement on, like, for instance, the pouching systems that are in the products that are getting used, because I know it gets developed all the time, and the patient obviously is taken into account with the development of these products. So that must have been quite interesting to see as well over the years.
Definitely. And when I was working in the public sector in Ireland, I worked with the government committee where it would have access. Well, it would, how would you say, it would look at new products that wanted to go on to market, and there would be rationale to whether this product would be valuable for patients. So there was a team of nurses that would help with the government body, help review those products. So I was on that forum. And before that, there had been a 7-year embargo on new products in Ireland. It was like a famine, basically. So we had no new products for 7 years, and then we had this we had new products and lots of them. So we were inundated with new products and the new technologies that had been in the UK and had been in Europe. But I see big improvements year on year. I think we're learning more about what patients want and need, and I think manufacturing companies listen to that a lot more and take that into consideration. So I think everyone is still looking for the pouch that ticks every box for somebody, or an accessory that will be life-changing for somebody. And I think that's so valuable, because we still have issues where patients still struggle with getting the correct pouching system or the correct fit, and they still have issues with management of leakages and complications. So we haven't reached a stage where we say, well, we've hit perfection. I think we still have a way to go, and I think there is an understanding that we still have to keep pushing on to get better products and to keep improving things for the patients that we look after.
Yeah. I always say I'm able to lead my best life because of the pouching system that I found. And I was very lucky because right from the beginning, I used the Dansec products, and they've really, I mean, okay, you do have an occasional leak, things like that happen, but still I am so happy and confident to go out. Even at an early stage after my surgery, I actually went on a 12-hour international flight, and I wasn't really worried because I knew my bag nothing major would happen, even though it was a fearful experience being an ostomate, newly ostomate, to fly. But I still knew it worked. Why wouldn't it work in the air? It all worked for me.
Great. And that's the kind of confidence that I want my patients to have too, and to know that, yes, you can live your best life. That I always say to patients, you know, you have to take hold of your stoma and take charge of it. Don't let it take control of you. And sadly, I meet people whose stoma is running them, basically. It's leading them, and they run to the tune of their stoma. But I always think, you know, if you take control of your stoma and you do regular care before leaks, and you've got a routine that you stick to, they're kind of, I would say, non-negotiables that I say to my patients. You know, stick to the basics and you should get good results. It's when I have maybe some patients and they kind of shy away from doing their care. They don't want to interact with having to do their care. So they will leave it for as long as possible, or they leave their pouch till it leaks. They say, it looks fine, I'm going to leave it. They don't want to do the care. And then, so they're always one step away from a leak. And that means that's all they ever know is, I do my care when my pouch leaks, which means the pouch and the stoma is in control of them. They have no, they don't know when it's going to just leak on them, which is not what you want for somebody. That's the polar opposite of what we want. So that's why I try and really at early stage say, oh no, we stick to a routine and you change before you've a leak, and then you're one step ahead, you're in control.
Yeah. I think that is so important, because your life obviously is not the same as before, and you have to, like you said, stick to a routine, or first of all, develop a routine that works for you. Now, from my own experience, it took a bit of a while before I had a routine, because obviously I was healing. I had a huge scar on my stomach. It wasn't just the stoma, it was also a healing process. So it took a while for me to actually feel, okay, now I'm in control, because I can sort of time it as well. I mean, I do intermittent fasting, so there is a time of my day where I know there won't be any activities, because I do this. I've always done it even before I had my ostomy surgery. So that sort of helped me, and I adapted. Let's say that's perhaps a better choice of words. But I like what you said, you have to stick to that routine as well. So you might think, oh, I don't need to change a bag, but maybe you should, to prevent that leakage.
Yes.
And you have to be willing to adapt and to stick to a routine.
Yes. And as you said, it takes time for that routine and for that adaptation to come into place, because in the beginning, people are sore, and even removing a pouch can be uncomfortable. And if you have a wound and a dressing, you're maybe having to change your pouch at the same time as your dressing, and you're sore, as you said, you've got internal bruising, external bruising, you've got your stitches, there's a lot going on. So I can see how And you're nervous, of course. And I think if that's been mirrored in the hospital setting, that you have nurses who are nervous doing the care, and I'm sure you've seen it, patients know very well if a nurse is confident doing the care or if they're not confident and not organised, and they spot that very quickly. So I think patients pick up on what they've learned, and if they see nurses not having confidence and not doing care kind of in different ways, they go, oh well, if nurses can't get a, you know, a good handle on this and get good security, then I don't know if I'm going to get results. So that's why that those early days are so important, I think. But as I often think, when I teach my patients how to do the care, it's a bit like teaching someone how to drive a car. You're teaching mirror, signal, maneuver. And people, you know, we learn that when we're driving. But then in real life, we do things a little bit and a belly go backwards. You know, you might do the maneuver and then look at the mirror and then do the signal. And we've all got little bad habits that we get into. And I think sometimes in stomach care, people will have learned the way they've been shown by the nurse, oh, you know, step by step. But then they find their own way or little shortcuts that work for them. And they say, oh, well, she showed me this way, but actually I find this easier. And sometimes patients show me a different way and I'll say, that's really good. I'll tell that to somebody else. I'll teach that to someone else. That's really useful. So people do find their own little ways and their shortcuts over time where they adapt, they've adapted themselves.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So I know that you're also responsible for training the next generation of stoma nurses. Now, what I can gather from this, it's not just knowing what you're doing, but it's also the empathy that you bring to the table towards your patient, because you are setting the scene for me, as in inverted commas, now being a confident ostomate or coming out of hospital with confidence. You're actually setting the scene.
Yes, exactly. And I find, so it's training staff and training nurses on surgical wards is a big part of my role. And it's a big part, I think, of a lot of stoma nurses that work in an acute hospital settings role, because we can't be there 24 hours a day, and we're not there at weekends, we're not there at night. So if something goes wrong with that pouch and it needs to be changed, it's the ward nurses that need to know how to do the care. And I know as a surgical nurse that worked in surgical wards for years, that's kind of your bread and butter. You need to know how to do this, just like you need to know how to do a wound dressing or do a blood pressure. So I think it's really important that I give them the skills that they can do the care as good as I can, and they understand why they're doing the care, but that they're also like that empathetic with the patients and patient with them, that they that they realize that this patient isn't just going to dramatically love their stoma and be happy about the situation, that they're fragile, that it's a very big moment in that patient's life, and their reaction and their care plays a part in that. So many nurses on the wards will say to me, that patient's not coping, that patient doesn't want to do the care. And I said, that's normal. And they're surprised. But of course, it's normal that the patient is nervous about doing the care and doesn't want to empty their pouch. They're so afraid of doing something wrong. This is all new to them. So I think the ward nurses sometimes expect the patient to just bounce up like a little bunny and go, oh yeah, I'll get on with this on day one. And when a patient doesn't do that, and when they won't look at their stoma, they immediately think the patient's having a really negative reaction, but that's just part of it. And so I know that patient who won't look at the stoma day one, day three, day five, day seven, day 14, whatever long it takes, eventually that patient will end up being able to look at their stoma, and with talking to them, they'll realize, you know, this is part of me, and part of me now has to care for this. So I'll give the patient as much time as they need, because I know they'll get there. They'll get there in the end with some support.
Now, the ward I was in, we were four women, and I wasn't the youngest, but I was clearly not the oldest because the lady in front or just ahead of me, she was in her 80s and she was struggling immensely. And they kept on saying to her, "We can only discharge you once you know how to change your pouch." And she would not have any of it. She did not even look at it. And I know they said they would get somebody of her family in that would potentially care for her. Do you have that often that the patient is so anti all of this and that you have to resort to a carer?
Yes, we do. It happens a lot. It happens an awful lot, because I think initially, if the patient is physically unwell, and I think sometimes it's harder maybe on like that, the more elderly community, because it's a huge change for everyone. But for them, I think they find it what you'd call an insult to the body. They can't cope with this change, a lot of them, maybe more than the majority. So they need a little bit more time. I think this is a real misconception that younger people struggle more than older people, but I think younger people seem to get on with things, be a little bit more kind of proactive about it, and they're more online, they have an online presence, and they know more kind of motivational and positive stories. Whereas elderly people, maybe they don't know anyone in their social circle that has a stoma, and for them, maybe the only people they've heard has a stoma are people that go on to pass away very quickly, so they think maybe this is a death sentence. They're very negative about it. And if they didn't know they were going to have a stoma, so if it was an emergency, they wake up with a stoma, they're angry. They're very angry about it, and I can accept that. So I have to go with their pace. But if like that, they're not able to do the care, there's a pressure on hospital beds in Ireland, just like the UK. So the pressure will come up. Either the patient goes to like a care facility where it's like a step down unit where they can continue getting education. They have to agree to that. But yeah, they can't go home unless they can do the care themselves. And that's a bit like here, you kind of have to do it to get home, or you're going to go to a care home for a period of time to rehab. Or someone in your family, if possible, will take it on. And it just then depends if they have a family member who can step in for that time, you know. But that's never what you want for the patient. The gold standard is that they take on the care. But I have had patients across the years of every age group who have said they can't do the care. So I've had women whose teenage daughters do their care for long periods of time until I intervened and got them to do their care, and it was stopping them go back to work. I've had patients say move in with a daughter who maybe has a newborn baby and say, "Well, she'll help me. She'll be good at that." And the daughter then re gets the dad readmitted and says, "I can't take on this care." So, you know, I've seen it all. So some people, I've had a few people will not just refuse to take on the care, and then I have other people who think they'll never do it, and then they turn a corner. They've gone from being very angry about having a stoma, very angry at me, because I am now the embodiment of everything stoma. So they'll reflect that and onto me as if it's my fault they have it, and I can take that, but because I know it's coming from a place of fear for them, that they're really shaken by what's happened. And I've seen people go from that stage of being fearful, angry, to being able to cope. But it does take time. Yeah, it does take time.
Now, one of the most profound phrases that I've come across in my life, and that's helped me through the surgery, first of all, through diagnosis, and then the surgery was, if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change.
Yes.
Because to me, it was always a lifesaver. It's always saved my life, and I always embodied it as such. I know a very dear friend of mine, her father never saw it like that, and he struggled all through the rest of his life with it. So I think what I'm trying to say is it depends a lot on how you perceive it, how you embrace it. I can actually almost say embrace it because it is part of you. Now it is just so part of me. I mean, I've only had it for 4 years, so I've had my longest life without it, but now I can't imagine my life without a stoma.
And I think you're right. I think there is a point where you have to accept that this is me. It's not maybe for some people, it's not the me that they thought they were going to be, and it wasn't in the plan of things, and maybe they wouldn't choose it for themselves. But it is a bit like saying, okay, well, this is it now, and I'm just going to have to gather myself up and accept it. And as you said, embrace it for what it is. And maybe not, I say to some patients, you don't have to be happy about it. Not everyone is going to be happy. They have a stoma. And as I said, I have patients who are really unhappy that this is the way things fell for them and the position they're in. But they still have to be able to deal with it. So I still say to them, okay, it is okay to feel like that. And if you can't get out of that feeling, you're stuck in it, then name it, feel it, accept it, and say, okay, I'm angry or I'm upset. This is how I am. But you still have to do the care, however the feelings come in, because it's those people who say, well, I hate it, but I don't want to do anything with it. But they're making themselves then dependent on other people, and that it's kind of adding to everything instead of saying, well, okay, I hate it, but I'll do the care because it's me, and it's an adjustment. But it is how you look at things, and that's why I suppose for our role, everyone we meet's different, and every day we have is so different. So we can have a day where we have people who are coping with really challenging stomas, really challenging life conditions, and they're coping, and they're not letting it hold them back, and they're still living their life. And we have other people then who maybe have what we call a perfect stoma, the lovely stoma that's in magazines and in books, but they can't adjust to it. And so we have everything in between. And I'm now at the stage where I'll say, I used to say I've seen it all. I'd have a patient with some unusual condition, and I'd say, that's it now, I've seen it all. But now I just say, I can never say I've seen it all, because every day there's something different, or I learn something new with a patient, or it'll just be a different approach that they will have.
I'm sure it's so challenging because, like you said, you've got the patient that might have so many health challenges, but they embrace it and they're okay with it. And those that you seem, well, this is an easy one, they are the ones struggling. So you have to be so empathic, so patient with them as well to let them, well, experience what their life can be like. For lack of a better word for explaining it, I think that's just so difficult.
And it's just to give them the support, or to give their carers the support, because I often think the carers, if they're picking up the pieces and they're doing the care, but they're also managing and juggling everything else in the family as well, and they're dealing with the doctors and the appointments and remembering the appointments and remembering to order supplies and maybe looking after a family, that they're dealing with a lot and juggling a lot, and then they're learning to do stoma care, which wasn't part of their scenario, and they may not have a medical background, and they're fearful they're doing something wrong. And I often find patients will be will be kind and will be fine with me if I'm doing the care and if I'm taking the adhesive off and it's stinging or it's pulling a little bit. But with the family member, they're not going to be as patient. So it'd be, oh, you just hurt me there, and oh, you're doing that too quickly, and that, you know, so the poor relative or the friend who's doing the care, they really get the rough end of it, you know, at that point. And they're already nervous that they're going to do something wrong. So so part of it is to support them too, and to just check in with them and how are they doing, and try and get the balance back in the relationship. So if you have a care or a family member who's been doing the care for a couple of weeks, and the patient has been just sitting back watching them do the care, then, you know, I have to try and get the right moment in time to say, okay, now we're going to do this like a partnership. So say you hold the spray and you spray the adhesive remover, and your wife's going to start removing the pouch, and then you're going to do the cleaning. Here's a cloth. So you get them working as a team, that it's not just one person, and then you get them doing more and more of the care, so that eventually they can be independent. So I'd always try and just with baby steps and slowly get that person involved in their care. When they say the longer it goes that they haven't been doing the care, the more they get into their head, oh, well, I can't do this. I couldn't possibly manage it. And sure, my husband can do it really well, or my wife, or whoever it is. And they start to believe, it's like this commentary in their head going, I couldn't manage the care. And of course, the longer that goes on, the harder it is to redirect that and to get them back doing their own care.
Yeah, because you believe what you say to yourself, even if it's the wrong thing, you start believing it.
Yes, exactly. And we're always hard on ourselves. And just like that, I see that with my patients too. They can be really super hypercritical. Oh, I forgot to do this. And I say, well, that's okay. We all make mistakes. It's like anything. You're going to make mistakes, but you'll learn from the mistakes. You just don't want to keep making them. That's all. And just to give them that it is okay. People do get things, forget to do something, and say, oh, I should have used this, or I forgot to do this first. Then so be it. But it's, you know, start again.
Exactly, start again. And sometimes I think we are so unkind to ourselves. We wouldn't talk to a family member or friends the way we talk to ourselves in a negative way. And I think it's just a time to actually also acknowledge what you've gone through. It's not been easy, and to give yourself that, well, like pat of a on your back saying, well, you've actually gone so far already. Acknowledge that. You know, we don't praise ourselves enough.
No, you're totally right there. I think we're all guilty of that. It's so easy to be hard on yourself, and I see that with my patients too. I think as I've learned as I've gone on, I would have always stepped in and said, you're doing great. I think you're doing well, and that's really good. And I'm projecting onto the patient. In a way, I was trying to just reassure them what they're doing is right. But then I learned over the years that, you know, it's very positive projection, but it's not leaving any room for honesty. So if I say to my patient, you did a great job and you should be proud and you should be so happy with that and well done you, then if they don't think they did a good job, or if they're struggling, then how did they come back from, say, you know, from this kind of Doris Day-like nurse and say, well, actually, I'm struggling and I'm finding this really hard, and I thought I was going to break down doing that, or I don't think I'll ever get the hang of this, because you've just filled the space with this kind of over positivity. So now I would say to patients, how do you think you're doing? How do you think that went? And then that leaves a space for an honest exchange. And if they say, oh, you know, I forgot this and I should have done that, and if they go down this negative road, then I can say, but you remembered this and you remembered that, and let's go through the steps. So, but you have something to work with that you haven't just, and I think years ago, I know I definitely was guilty of it, where I would project this, but I thought I was being supportive and reassuring by just going, "Oh, you're so good. That was fantastic." And never asking the patient how they thought they were doing, because it takes more time when you do that, because you have to leave time then if they, whatever they come back with, you need to be ready to listen to it and to make time for it. That if they say, "Oh, I'm struggling," you can't say, "Well, that's fine, see you in 2 days' time," and out the curtains or out the door. So you have to have time for that conversation. And we need to be mindful of it. Yeah.
And this way, I think you also take the pressure off the patient that they have to perform, because everybody's timing is different, and they might just feel pressurized and, oh, everything has to be fine, but maybe it isn't fine. So you're actually giving them that space now, which you rightly said is so important.
You're giving them the permission to talk about how they feel about it, instead of projecting how we feel they're doing. And yes, we have lots going on in our head. We're thinking of, all the things that, how they're reacting and how they're coping, and who's the next patient, and maybe your phone you're going in your pocket. But you're still having to go, "Right, well, I'm here now, I'm making time for this person." And that's one thing that I try and get across to the nurses I'm training, just to say, instead of just being that, as I said, uber positive, just to say, to ask the question and to let that patient feel heard and listened to. Because I think in the ward setting, the doctors will come in and say, "You're doing really well today, and your temperature is good, and your wound is good, and your bloods are good, and everything's looking good, and you're going to be going home in a few days." And the dietitian comes in and goes, "Here's your diet, and you just stick to this, and it's simple." And the physio will tell you, "You're doing great. You walk 10 steps." Everyone's telling you how good you're doing, but you may not feel you're doing good. You probably feel like you're doing the worst you've ever felt in your whole life, and physically and emotionally. And then where you've no one to say that to, the nurses are going, "Oh, you sat out in the chair, go, you did, that's really good." You've been sitting out in a chair your whole life, and all of a sudden someone's telling you did a good job for getting out of bed and sitting on a chair. So it's just to ask the patient, how are you feeling? How do you think you're doing? We don't do that very often enough in healthcare, because it's time, and you have to make the time for that person to give their honest answer. And then you have to be able to cope with it. So if they then, go, "Okay, I've been building up like a can of Coke here, full of emotion, full of things that I need to say," and then it'll all just come spilling out, and we just have to be able just to listen, and realize, you don't need to know all the answers, but sometimes just listening is enough, and saying, I don't have the answers, but I'm here to listen."
Yeah, it's so important, the listening part, and for the patient to be heard.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Now, doing things like at the moment we've got Bowel Cancer Awareness Month, we talk openly about it, but what more needs to be done to keep that awareness going all year round?
Yeah. Well, I think we do need it all year round. I think it could be a lot more visible. It could be, we have adverts for mobile phones for holidays. As soon as Christmas is over, there's all these ads about going on your summer holidays. It could be a lot more visible. Say like 1 minute before soaps, there could be an advert, one day for bowel cancer, the next about breast cancer awareness. There's a lot more we can do to improve awareness, in schools maybe as well, too, because of course we know that the cohort of people that are getting bowel cancer, the age profile is going younger and younger and younger. So I have teenagers, and I know that in schools, they need to learn about this because they're going to go to college and they need to be aware of signs to look for. And in my girls' schools, they were taught about breast cancer and how to be aware of changes, but there was no mention of bowel cancer awareness. So I think we can do a lot more. The screening, of course, no more than England. In Ireland, the screening age is a very tight system. So in Ireland, it's age 57 to 71, but we're missing so many. And I think in the UK, I know that it's still not much younger than that. Is it 50, 55 in the UK? So we need to get down a lot younger, don't we? I think we need to get down to maybe 45 or 40 to try and get that group that are being missed. And maybe bring it up further as well. There is a lot more we can do. And maybe if people have an annual check with their GP, that should be something that is part of the annual review. You know, have you had any changes? Are you having any discomfort when you pass a stool? Any signs of bleeding, weight loss? Because I still have patients who tell me that they've gone to their GP with PR bleeding. And again, they have been dismissed as a hemorrhoids because they don't fit the age profile. And that's still happening. There's a lot more to be done because not everyone, of course, that has bowel cancer will have a stoma, either temporary or permanent. But if it can be avoided, let's try and avoid it.
I was in that age profile and I was also sent home with a hemorrhoid ointment. And I fought for my having a colonoscopy, and then everything went very quickly because I just knew something was up. I just knew it. And I always say, before your body starts screaming, it actually whispers to you. There are subtle signs. I always advocate for those signs to be taken serious when they are persistent for a longer time to have it checked out, because that peace of mind is just so good to have. And even when I was diagnosed, I actually felt relieved because I knew now we can deal with it.
But I think what you said there is so correct. You know, before, as you said, before your body starts screaming, it's whispering. And you're so right. There are always subtle signs. And I think people try to think, I'm imagining that a lot of us, we don't want to believe that something serious could be happening. But we all, at the end of the day, you know your body and you know when there's a change. So if there is a change, listen to your body, because it is sending you a message there. And it is terrible that you had to fight for your colonoscopy. I hear that with my patients more frequently than I want to. And it's never good news, because generally, if they've had to fight for it and they've had symptoms for quite a while, their disease can have spread. And there's an uphill battle straight away. That could have been, it could have been caught a lot earlier. And so we need to do a lot more. And I think we need to try and use our voices to advocate for people to try and raise that awareness with our governments to try and change those screening cohort ages to try and get it brought down.
Now we're almost at the end of the show. So if you could change one thing, whether it's public perception or healthcare support or patient experience, what would it be for you?
Well, that's a great question, because there's so much I would love to change. But if I had to pick one thing, for stoma patients, I would pick that they would be leak-free. That would be one thing, because I think leakages and fear of leakages can really break somebody's confidence and their self-esteem. And being leak-free is like winning the lottery. And when I have patients that tell me they're leak-free, I'm delighted for them. But that should be the gold standard that all ostomates have, because one leak is one leak too many. So I think we need to keep pushing for our products to deliver more and to improve awareness with patients and staff how to manage stomas, so that we don't let leaks occur and that leaks are something of the past.
Oh, I hear you. Definitely. Anna, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. We've unfortunately come to the end of the special episode of Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio. I just want to genuinely thank you for joining me today and sharing your expertise and your honesty and the care you bring to everything you do. This has been really a meaningful conversation, and I know it will stay with a lot of people listening in today. Of course, I want to thank Dansac also for supporting this special series during Bowel Cancer Awareness Month. Now, as an ostomate, I know how much having the right options matter, and having that choice can make a real difference to how confidently we live in our day-to-day lives. To everyone listening, whether you're living with a stoma or supporting somebody who is, or just taking the time to understand more, thank you for being here and for being part of these conversations. Thank you, Anna. And just before we go, a reminder, bowel cancer awareness doesn't stop at the end of this month. It's something that matters all year round. Early detection really does save lives. Before your body screams, it often whispers. So until next time, thank you so much, Anna. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Rafaela.
Bye for now.